Tennessee was able to survive the barrage of errors there in the final couple minutes of the game. That does give you some hope for, I'm trying to think what the hope is for, just being able to maybe still pull off an upset here in the next couple of weeks. But if you consider everything that was going on in that game, it also was kind of closing the door on some postseason.
Well, it's difficult to see Tennessee lose to South Carolina and then play that way against Vanderbilt and then say, you know what I like? Tennessee's chances to go on a big run here in the final five games. I mean, if
because Florida's going to be better than Vandy, right? Even though you get them at home, they're better.
Yeah, everybody's better than Vanderbilt in the SEC. They're the worst. So, yeah, Florida's going to be better. Not that Tennessee can't win that game. It's just that Tennessee's going to have to be a lot better, and Tennessee's going to have to be, I would say, more consistent than it's been, but it would just have to be consistent for the first time. I don't think we've really seen a consistent stretch from Tennessee's basketball team yet.
Do you also think that, is there any sort of way they were victims of not taking Vanderbilt very seriously, and that's why they had such a bad first half? Like, they were overlooking them a little bit. Mm. Obviously, you would feel very confident being a 13.5-point favorite going into last night. Is there any way that that also skewed the way they played that game? Like, I don't think they're going to come out uninspired against Auburn.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I would hope that that's the case. I would be stunned to see Tennessee come out uninspired against really any of these teams, even Arkansas, a team that Tennessee already knows that it can beat without much trouble, because you're going on the road. That's a game where you should be up for it. Kentucky on the road, not sure how much it's going to matter, but you go up there and you play and you try to win. And then both Auburn games. So, sure, in Florida. Florida's one where I don't think effort's going to be an issue for the team, but that I still think that's part of it. I mean, mental awareness of what's going on, that's in the effort family, I guess. I mean, that final minute, I don't think Tennessee was, I wouldn't call it not trying, because they had just tried so hard. I thought it was more, it goes more to the IQ aspect of what Rick Barnes was talking about. And again, maybe that's all still part of the same conversation.
Yeah, I think when maybe there's stress in the air, which Vanderbilt was making a push, they were making it stressful on Tennessee, their brains just lock up a little bit. And you saw it with Jarrett Garantano at different points during the football season. I mean, when he was really feeling the pressure, he was just making silly decisions. And I think that that is something that Rick Barnes saw in his squad late yesterday. It was such a roller coaster of a game. You felt terrible at halftime. 6 minutes in, when they weren't doing the interview on camera, and you could actually watch the game, you felt great about Tennessee. You know, with 3.5 minutes to go, you felt like, oh, Tennessee might cover. That is awesome. That's a turnaround from being tied at 28 at the half. And then for it to end like it did, you're just not happy with the ending. You could have been happy if they would have kept the big win in hand, but they gave it away, and you're just like, now we got to go on the road to Auburn.
Joel, how does it affect your thoughts on Tennessee entering the final five games of the season?
I don't think anything changes for me. I think Tennessee's NCAA tournament hopes kind of sunk with the South Carolina loss. They were kind of on thin ice at that point already. I just think with the league as a whole, with the depth that you have and the lower number of teams getting in and where Tennessee stands, I think Tennessee is going to obviously have to play better if you're hoping to beat maybe Florida and Arkansas. And then if you're trying to spring an upset of Auburn, either at home or in Alabama or at Rupp Arena against Kentucky, Tennessee is just going to need to shoot better, quite frankly, above everything else. Tennessee's doing a better job in recent weeks of getting to the free throw line. Josiah Jordan James coming back, if he's able to play a bigger role moving forward, maybe that can help Tennessee. The Vols really have to just start shooting better, because that continues to be an issue for them. So offensively, Tennessee needs to do a lot of work, and Rick Barnes obviously spoke to that after the first half last night.
Yeah, only 2.5 weeks to go in the regular season, then it's postseason time. You got a game on in there? What are you watching?
Michigan State and Maryland from the weekend. Never had a chance to go back and watch it because of Ice Bear. Sorry, I didn't realize you could hear it.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've turned my headphone up to, who's got the super high volume? Ainge? Will? They were talking about it earlier today. Anyway, Yeah, I heard it back there. But that's cool. Behind the Arc podcast, they can check it out.
Yep, and dropped a new podcast earlier this morning talking about Tennessee's chances. Also, who else is hot around the rest of college basketball? And then, of course, recapping that big LSU-Kentucky game in the SEC as well.
Yeah, Kansas-Baylor is going to get a ton of attention heading in the weekend. I did look it up. I don't think we mentioned on air. ESPN, I believe, is who's going to carry it. So yeah, it's going to be available on your television.
Guess what? I have that channel. Oh, yeah, 206. Know exactly where that is. ESPN Plus, it's crickets, whatever I try to log on there. We had a question in the face-off, just to revisit that really quickly, about Tennessee's chances of going on the road versus Auburn. I honestly think we might have shot both of us too high. I think you ended at 25%. I ended at 30%.
Okay.
Auburn hasn't lost a game this year at home. They're not going to lose to the Vols.
Well, I'm not going to pick Tennessee. I mean, don't get me wrong here.
What is the ESPN predictor? Has that been updated yet? Because it's got to say like 8%.
Well, no, it'll be higher than that. Ken Palm says Tennessee has a 28% chance.
That's right in between both of us. I would have gone over, though, so you would have won both showcases.
Well, naturally. So, yeah, not 8%. What'd you say? 8% is what it's...
I said, was that what the predictor? The matchup predictor on ESPN is 21.7% chance for Tennessee.
Okay. What's the Okoro status for tonight against Georgia? Any idea? Any update on that?
I haven't heard an
update. Still questionable, I guess, probably.
Yeah.
Until we see him go play. Auburn against Georgia tonight. I like Auburn.
Yeah, was we were talking about earlier. I mean, Georgia, they just can't get out of their own way. I mean, you got to put them in Arkansas in the category of what the heck happened. Well,
Georgia was 10-3 and coming off a road win at top 10 Memphis, and we're all talking about, hey, maybe they can turn this into a tournament run.
I thought they were going to be a team to watch.
Yeah.
I did. I mean, I did too. They are 4-26. In nearly two full seasons in the SEC under Tom Crean. And they had Nicholas Claxton last year, Anthony Edwards this year. There's no reason that he should only have three more wins than Vanderbilt in the last two seasons in the SEC.
The fact that they have a guy, and I haven't looked at Sam Vecenie's latest, but, I mean, is he still projected, like, top three?
Edwards for sure.
Yeah.
Without question.
You got a guy that's that good? And you can't do better than 4-26.
Had a friend point out it's not this is worse, but
Edwards didn't play last year.
Oh, I get what you're saying. Freshman. Okay, yeah.
This is I guess somewhat comparable. I would say worse again, but Ben Simmons, LSU. You got a guy that's projected number one pick. He was the number one pick, and they just fell short. But this has been even worse for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Washington won what, 9 games when it had Markelle Fultz?
You know the
didn't he get hurt though?
Fultz.
Or was that when he entered the NBA?
That was in the NBA.
Okay.
Yeah. The schools that don't typically bring in that level player, it's not that easy for them to succeed with them. It's more Kentucky, Duke, which also brings in more than just one and done guy.
So, I think it's different if you get one of those guys at a mid-major conference, which is rare, those late bloomers that can then develop into being lottery picks. But you're right. When it's the major schools, you can't have one player and just expect to take over a conference. But even despite all that, 2 wins in SEC play with Anthony Edwards on your roster. It's not like the other guys around him are bums. Sevier Wheeler, Tamani Kamara, Rayshon Hammonds, those are all 4-star prospects. Those guys were 4-star recruits in their recruiting classes, and they can't do better than 2 wins.
Yeah, not like they're playing Duke and Kansas every night.
Well, exactly.
Not in the SEC.
There's some games up for grabs.
Yeah. Auburn, a 4.5-point favorite tonight. I looked at the Action Network, 86% of the bets on Auburn, even more than money. So even the Sharps is like, yeah, maybe we'll just roll with Bruce here. We'll come back here on Sports 180, the anniversary of not a proud moment for one of the all-time greats in sports. Also, ratings update. We're all in on ratings these days. We'll update you on what happened this past weekend with all the different sports. Braden Gall talking college football at 2:30 here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thanks for being with us. We'll note a historic moment for you coming up in just a moment with today's pop-up fact. Braden Gall at 2:30. Before all of that, how about we find ourselves a winner? 2 tickets to Jason Aldean. He's coming up this weekend. We're going to make you work for it. Caller number 4 to 656-WINS, 656-9467. wins two tickets to see Jason Aldean coming to Knoxville this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, you don't just have to be chilling on some dirt road somewhere. You can be chilling inside Thompson Bowling Arena, seeing all the awesome acts leading up to the Jason Aldean taking the stage. You're going to have a great evening and really enjoy a great show.
KnoxvilleTickets.com/Aldean. KnoxvilleTickets.com/Aldean if you're looking for tickets to the show coming up this weekend in Knoxville. Very excited for that. And we'll still be giving tickets away through the end of the week. Have to pick them up by 5:30 on Friday if you win.
Yes. So if you're a winner, come by our offices. You'll be greeted by one of our awesome people at the front desk, and they will get you your tickets. So 5:30 Friday is the cutoff, and then the show is this Saturday. So everybody enjoy.
Yeah, 2019, 2020, we've really taken off in terms of the interest level, the coverage of TV ratings. I think we've also reached a point where ratings maybe tell us less than ever before because of all the media stuff there. But we still look them up, and there are interests in what's going on with NASCAR's ratings, the NBA's ratings, the XFL, which factors in as well. So from Showbuzz Daily this past weekend, the Daytona 500, actually running on Monday, of course, 10.943 million viewers. That's persons 2+, so all ages, adults 18 to 49, 2.36 million, 6.26 rating. So I would say pretty solid there. The NBA All-Star Game on Sunday, more than 6 million viewers. Saturday night did well, more than 5 million viewers, I would say. And then when you look at the XFL, Saturday and Sunday, the highest or the most viewed broadcast was Sunday afternoon on ABC. Close to 2.4 million people checked out the Dallas-LA game. Playing out west, and then Fox on Saturday had 2.3 million viewers, 2.1 million for the ABC game on Saturday, the FS1 game, so the one that was on cable, much lower compared to the others, but still 1.35 million viewers for the Sunday evening game, which also went up against the All-Star game in the second half.
Yeah, it would have also been going up against golf because they were playing out on the West Coast.
That's true.
And that was, you know, a very heavy field and with Adam Scott, who has won a major before. There was definitely intrigue there.
Yeah, so they had good ratings on Sunday, 3 million viewers for the Genesis Open.
Nice, yeah. Nice. So the XFL, it really is all about channel placement and your accessibility. Now, I will say, I think the games, I don't think this takes a rocket scientist to figure it out, games on ESPN are going to be higher than FS1, because I can tell you, I know you've gone to YouTube TV, so you don't have to remember channels anymore, but ESPN on my TV, it's 206. I can't tell you where FS1 is. I would actually have to turn on the guide, go to 206, which is ESPN, and then surf from there, because I know it would be in the same area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a problem that they are still trying to overcome, being a newer channel.
Yeah, and it's still early. Let's see how this plays out for the XFL over the course of the season. The most viewed XFL game was Sunday afternoon, Dallas versus LA, 2.4 million viewers. The most viewed college basketball game this past weekend, Indiana at Michigan, 1.4 million viewers. So 1 million more watching the most viewed XFL game compared to the most viewed college basketball game. Now, of course, you have so many more college basketball games. Mm-hmm. You had, let's count them up, 7 different college basketball games with more than 1 million viewers this past weekend.
Wow, that's incredible. And in a year that we have deemed college basketball to not be as good as maybe previous years, that's still really good numbers that they're pulling in. And you were right to point out at the beginning of our conversation, the way people consume things now, the ratings have not caught up. I think it's still a good indicator of how many people are watching.
Sure, there's still listening. Comparisons.
Yeah, there's definitely still valid comparisons, but it is harder than ever right now to get a true how many eyeballs are on my product to be able to sell to advertisers and stuff, because there's just so many different ways that you can watch something at this point in time.
Now, I know this was viewed by a lot of people. Let's hit today's pop-up fact.
It's time for today's Sports 180 pop-up fact of the day. A quick look at a did you know factoid.
There was 10 years ago today, Tiger Woods gave his big apology on national television after what had come out about what he was doing away from golf.
I know. And it was so, I remember how he looked. He did not look healthy at the time. He said he was going to enter treatment for, he didn't really go into it, but people later found out like a sexual addiction. And that was just, you talk about rocking the golf world. It was like an earthquake to those guys that Tiger Woods, the golden child, had, you know, had fallen to this depth and was making this public apology. It's just so wild that this happened. And I can't believe it's been 10 years now.
Yeah, that's the other part of it. You want to talk about millions of viewers. It had it. Fox News, more than 2 million people watching. ESPN, more than 1.7 million watching at the time. Other channels, CNN carried it. Golf Channel carried it. So, yeah, that was a big deal then. And the story since then has been remarkable as well with Tiger Woods. The ups and the downs along the way, the highest up, winning the Masters last year.
Yeah, winning the Masters last year to kind of cap off the 10 years since he had won a major conversation. That was incredible. And the fact that I think what's even more crazy when you think about his career and the ups and downs is, yeah, he was taking a lot of heat for everything that he was doing while he was married. But the fact that he had three back surgeries in a very short amount of time and couldn't walk at one point without being in significant amount of pain, to then hoisting the trophy at the Masters, putting on that green jacket, that's incredible.
Yep. So a decade has now passed since the very strange and highly, very much watched apology from Tiger Woods, which was an awkward moment for him and a lot of people, his family, I'm sure, as well.
And I know he's been in a long-term relationship, but it's also, he's been in two, the one that he's in now, and then also Lindsey Vonn dating her for a long time, but never gotten remarried.
Yeah, so he's in a relationship now, mm-hmm. Honestly.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It was a woman that helped him start the Woods restaurant that he has down in Jupiter.
Okay.
A woman that was an integral part in that, and they've been a long-term couple for several years now.
All right. We will come back. Braden Gall, we'll talk some college football with him, some hoops as we head into the final 2.5 weeks of the regular season in college basketball. That's coming up next with another half hour of Sports 180 to go. Midday Sports Minute for you right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. And that's where we go to begin this segment here on Sports 180. Thank you for being with us alongside Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward. We welcome to the show Braden Gall, joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, Athlon Sports, the Cover 2 podcast. Braden, we appreciate the time as always. I saw you tease out that on the Cover 2 podcast, you were covering storylines, headlines, heading into the start of spring practice around college football.
I'm making fun of them, actually. I went back last year and I found like 15 headlines coming out of spring practice, and I wasn't trying to pick on any one particular media entity or website or whatever. I love all the great folks at 24/7 Sports, but they had a collection of spring headlines, like, hey, what we learned about spring football, which always makes me chuckle in and of itself. We basically read through all of them as sort of our preview to show you just how little you're going to learn from spring games and from spring practice. One of them, for example, was Ohio State has a quarterback battle looming. Okay, that's funny. Penn State didn't have a quarterback battle at all. They didn't have answers at Penn State for their quarterback situation. So, like, some of them were accurate. Some of them were sort of common sense, but a lot of them were just guesses, like everything else about spring football. So what we wanted to do is look at teams that we think are going to be better in 2020 because of football, not because of a spring game or a practice or a headline where you're not going to really know anything or learn anything. And so we actually delved into teams that we really like in 2020. Tennessee is one of them, for example. I don't care what happens in a spring game. I don't care if Ty Chandler runs for 1,000 yards. He's probably not going to be the starter. You know what I mean? So we read through a bunch of headlines sort of jokingly and then went into why we like teams because of development, talent, recruiting, returning starters, schedule, coaching staff, like all the real reasons you're good at football, not spring football or a spring game. So that podcast should be out. It should be up on the website now and up iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Tennessee's one of them. They're one of the 12 or 13 teams that we really pinpointed as teams that should take major steps forward in 2020, but none of them are related. None of those reasons are related to what's going to happen in the Tennessee spring game.
So scratching out Harrison Bailey challenging Jarrett Garantano.
Well,
okay, no. We're just scratch that. No, but Brayden, what do you like about Tennessee? What gives you confidence talking about the Vols being one of a handful of teams that could really make some noise this upcoming season?
Well, some of it's Tennessee, and there's obviously a lot to discuss there. Some of it is the rest of the SEC, and if you look at the SEC, and we really struggled to come up with teams that we think are definitively going to take a major step forward in the SEC in 2020. Because how do you make that case for LSU? You can't. How do you make that case for Alabama? How do you make that case for Georgia? I don't think you can make the case for Auburn to be demonstrably better than they were last year. So you can look around the SEC, and outside of maybe A&M or Florida and probably Ole Miss, there's not too many teams that you're going to go, that team clearly looks like it should, not will, but should be better in 2020. And Tennessee is probably at the top of the entire list. And a lot of it's about quarterback turnover. There's not a lot of quarterbacks everywhere else in this conference that are dependable. There certainly could be some stars that shake that up. But if you look at Tennessee's collection of talent and where they're at from a roster standpoint, schedule standpoint, development standpoint, there's just no question that Tennessee should be better in 2020. So there's not, and if you look around the SEC, like how many teams can you definitively say that about? And how many teams are going to take one of the biggest weaknesses of their roster last year and turn it into one of the biggest strengths? And that's what Tennessee's going to do with their offensive line. In a matter of 12 months, it'll go from one of the worst offensive lines in the SEC to one of the best. You know, the quarterback situation sort of is what it is, right? You've got a veteran, a fifth-year senior. You know, guy's got tons of experience. You've also got the hotshot freshman who could be really good. So you don't really know what that is. But we know what the talking point is. If the freshman's good enough to win the job, then he's probably really good. And if he's not, you've got a pretty dependable fallback option that, as long as he just does what he's supposed to, should be able to give you chances to win games with a great running game and a defense that's got some star power. So you start looking around the league and you just go, you know, outside of Ole Miss and Tennessee, I don't see a whole lot of teams in the SEC that are going to be definitively better. All of this comes with the caveat that it's February. So, like, we're still very early in this process.
Sure. We're talking to Brayden Gall at Brayden Gall on Twitter, talking about the Cover 2 podcast as well. And South Carolina's a team. I'm curious, if we're talking about where are teams headed, where is Will Muschamp's program headed, do you think, heading into 2020?
I mean, that's a fantastic question. They're one of the few that's sort of in the wild card territory. I'd put them in there with A&M probably as well as maybe even Ole Miss. You know, you like what you have out of Helinski. You know, defensively, you like where this unit is, but they just, you know, I don't know. When Hugh Freeze is the coach next year, maybe they'll be really good. I have major questions about the direction of the coaching staff and the overall talent, which is always going to be a problem at South Carolina. Like, you can recruit the 21st best recruiting class in the nation every year, and that's really good for South Carolina and really good for most leagues. It's just not good enough in the SEC, and that's where Tennessee is a have. And South Carolina is a have-not in the SEC. It's why I argue with, you know, Matt Jones all the time about Tennessee not being a program that has national title DNA. Of course they do, because they can land top 10 classes and Kentucky can't. Like, that's, you know, like, that's the difference between a team that has competed for national championships at the highest level and not. And South Carolina, you know, listen, they got Jordan Burks. Like, they did a really good job. It's just, you just look at the overall roster talent and depth and you just go, how is this group going to break through? I know I've said a lot about Ole Miss already, and I think they've got some dynamic weapons on offense, and they're going to score a bunch of points. I don't think they're going to stop anybody, and by improvement, I mean like 6 or 7 wins. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not suggesting they're going to compete in the West. Tennessee's a team that if things start to fall right, they can compete in the East. Georgia's coming back to the pack a little bit, I think, at least from an established star power on offense standpoint. They're going to have to find new pieces. I trust Kirby Smart to do that. Florida's the one team that you could see just sort of sticking with who they are and truly being, you know, playoff SEC caliber good. I also threw this out on the podcast today, and this, it doesn't really tie into South Carolina with what you're asking, but I could see 5 through 10 in the all being in the SEC nationally and not one of them making the playoff. It's the first year I've ever looked at teams and thought to myself, I wouldn't be surprised if a 2-loss Alabama won the SEC, or a 2-loss Florida, or a 2-loss, you know, Auburn, or a 2-loss Georgia, or whatever. And I wouldn't be surprised if everybody had multiple losses. and they were all really, really good, but none of them sort of fit that criteria of one-loss conference champion, which seems to be sort of this bizarre criteria to make the playoffs.
You touched on it just a second ago. We had a question back in hour number one of who could be that bounce back team in college football this year, and specifically in the SEC. And as a joke, Joel, our producer, just throws out it could be Alabama. They could bounce back and not have the two loss season and be back in the playoff conversation. And it sounds just crazy to call that a bounce back, but it really could be with the pieces they have returning. It's all going to hinge on what Mac Jones or their recruit, that their signee that's going to come in, what they can do. But what do you see for the Tide? Do they take back the crown, I guess, in the SEC?
I mean, that's the odds-on best bet right now, right? I mean, if you're gambling, Alabama has the best odds to make the playoff out of the SEC. They're the likely front runner to win the West. You know, and they're probably better than Georgia and Florida right now at this point. So they're clearly probably your front runner to win the SEC. The question is do they get by and get through with one loss or not, right? I mean, that's sort of the question we're asking. And if they do, then they're guaranteed to be in. And you're right, but bounce back from, I mean, like, first of all, the polls dropping them to 12 was just absurd. Like, that was just ridiculous. So really they were like 5, 6, or 7, somewhere in there. And, you know, can you really bounce back from finishing seventh in the nation? Like, that feels so weird, but it's kind of true. They're the only team that made the playoff every year. It's absolutely, you can absolutely make that argument. And so, I think they're the best team. They would be my pick to win everything in the SEC. The question is it 12-1 or is it 11-2? And does that get you into the playoff or not?
Braden Gall, follow him on Twitter, at Braden Gall. Before you go, college basketball, final couple of weeks here in the regular season. What have you thought of the SEC, and do you think Kentucky is the strongest? Is Auburn the biggest challenger to Kentucky heading into the final couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I've always thought really highly of Florida, and I've just been wrong basically all year. They'll still get into the tournament or whatever and have a good run. Kentucky's got the most upside this time of year every single year. They've got guys, they've got length, they've got athleticism. Coach Cal seems to do his best coaching at this time of year, or some coaching at this time of year. And so I think Kentucky's the team. I just don't expect I expect everything in the NCAA tournament to be completely bonkers. Like, I'm excited about it because I don't think there's any one cross-section of teams that you can look at and point to and say, this team is going to be the team, or this section of teams. Or, like, the Big Ten could get 11 or 12 teams in. Like, what is that? That's insane. So – you know, when you've got a West Coast Conference team, a Mountain West team, you know, and they're good programs, San Diego State and Gonzaga and, you know, Seton Hall, like, they're good programs. I get that, but they're not traditional powers, Seton Hall at least, or some of these other teams. Like, I think you're just in store for a great run. Kansas might be the best team in the country, and who knows if they're going to have, like, who knows if they're even allowed to be playing basketball right now. So, it's going to be a fascinating March, and I'm not sure I'd put any money on anybody in the SEC outside of Kentucky making a run. But you know, Bruce Pearl will have something up his sleeve come March.
Yeah, look at what he did last year as well. Braden Gall, the Cover 2 podcast, so people can check it out and find you making fun of college football a little bit, which is always fun.
Oh, absolutely. Rate, review, and subscribe. The Cover 2 podcast on Spotify, iTunes, everywhere you find podcasts. Making fun of spring football analysis is what we're doing.
Yeah, that's probably a good reminder, because we'll be trying to break it down on Sports Talk Radio here in just a few weeks.
If Braden knows, there's always somebody that comes out of nowhere because of, like, injuries to other people in their position groups, and they have an amazing spring game, and then people are talking about that person all summer long. And when fall camp, they fall back to, like, fourth on the depth chart, and we're like, we tried to tell you.
Yeah, I have just a...
Yeah. Well, I think it was it Richard Dixon for LSU that had like 9 carries for like 248 yards in like an LSU spring game in like 2006, and got like 3 carries that year. Like, am I the only one who maybe I'm making up that name? Maybe Dick Dixon wasn't a real person. I don't know.
Well, that's about right. I mean, you have the Kirsten Biggers, David Yancey awards at Tennessee, and David helped Tennessee. I mean, but
Cody Blank was another one.
Yeah, the spring backs that would have a big rushing day. It's like, well, it's probably just going to go to Jamal, say.
Hey, yeah, there you go, exactly.
Hey, Braden, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All All right, guys. Take it easy.
Braden Gall each week right here on Sports 180.
That was great. It's probably just going to go to Jamal. When in doubt, defer to Jamal Lewis. Yes.
Yeah, Jamal, Travis Henry, he's pretty good too. We will come back. Final segment, Power Poll, driven by Ted Russell Ford, and then Sports Talk taking over at 3 o'clock right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. You can find us online, 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Listen live, listen on demand. We have sports coverage, news breaks. We have you covered. 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Sports Talk coming up at 3 o'clock. We have had a lot to cover here today.
We really have. And everything from a 10-year anniversary of the Tiger Woods apology to XFL ratings. I mean, this show has gone a million different ways, and it's definitely been a fun ride. And thanks to Braden Gall, who joined us just a few minutes ago. I love the idea of them looking back on past spring headlines and making fun of those, because it's so easy to get wrapped up because you're wanting football to be here. You're excited. There's been a little bit of a drought, so people maybe run a little wild, and the headlines can pop out and maybe not be extremely accurate for the 2020 season.
Hey, we talked earlier about Trey Smith winning the Jason Witten Collegiate Man of the Year Award. I think very deserving. We played his speech, which I recommend you check it out online. You can find it there if you missed it earlier. If you podcast the show, we played it at the very start of the 1 o'clock hour. But also, Jason Witten in the news in that he wants to play for another year. But if it's not in Dallas, you could play somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're a Tennessee person. You're a Cowboys person. The idea of Jason Witten finishing his career elsewhere, what do you think?
It really hurts, and I don't think the Cowboys are, I don't think they're interested at this point in time. I think they want him to retire a Cowboy, obviously, but it's very similar situation to Emmitt Smith. I mean, Emmitt Smith went somewhere else. You know, he went to Arizona to try and get the record, and he did not finish his really playing career as a Cowboy. So it stinks. You know, Jason Witten is my favorite Vol. I just love the guy. He's always done things the right way. If he goes somewhere else and the rumors are out there that he could go to the New York Giants, I mean, that is really going to be hard, but I'll overcome it. I mean, I will not let anything he does from here on out tarnish my amazing memories of watching Jason Witten as a Cowboy. Like, it's going to stink, but it's not going to like make me any less of a fan.
Yeah, certainly not. You're right. You don't want to see...
I've got almost 20 years invested in this guy.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to see the all-timers. I mean, Patriots fans, they obviously don't want to see Brady finish somewhere else. And comparing Witten to Brady is not really fair. He's a future Hall of Famer. Emmitt did... He did break the record, though, as a Cowboy. He just finished somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
But with the Arizona Cardinals. But because... Yeah, Jerry wasn't going to let that happen. Where he's there celebrating. Tom Glavine got his 300th in a Met uniform. That was kind of tough. And did ultimately go back to Atlanta.
Yeah, but that doesn't lessen any of your memories, right, of watching Glavine pitch.
No.
Did I also tell you about the time I got to sit by Jason Witten in the lunchroom at Gibbs one day?
I don't think so.
It made my life. I was a freshman. Yeah, and I was like, I mean, that was the only seat that was like available. And it was not right next to him. It was like two down. But I felt like it was right next to him.
So you weren't sitting next to him? Just at the same table?
I feel like you're putting me in the spin zone, okay? No spin. It was, okay, it was two seats down. But it was very close. He's a big guy, so it was really 1.5 seats away.
Did you guys communicate during this lunch?
No.
Remember that one time?
That was 2002. I remember it like it was yesterday.
All right. So you were both college students at the same time.
Yeah.
You're both your fellow athletes.
He was a huge star already.
He was really good. Really good player.
He was a huge star. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I've heard about this guy. And then he goes to my favorite team. I mean, it was like just destiny for me to sit at that lunch seat that day.
Is that what it was? I got to be honest with you. It's a very sad moment.
I did get a picture later on with him at a party that Kenny Chesney threw for Condridge after the ESPN documentary came out. I did, as a media member, I broke the cardinal sin where I asked an athlete for a picture. I was like, hey, I don't do this, but you're like my favorite player of all time. Can I get a picture? And he was more than gracious.
John, there was this one time I was in the same arena as Eddie Vedder, lead singer of my favorite band. Now, he was on the stage, and I was several rows back, but I mean,
you tell everybody about the Taylor Swift handshake and conversation.
Oh, that's all too real, okay?
Yeah, you did actually converse with her, so I give you credit. Yeah,
yeah, and very... A story from another time for another day. Let's hit today's power poll.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engine.
Nuclear power plant.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The Power Poll, driven by Ted Russell Ford. Two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
You know, Kelly's the lucky girl because of it.
I have really not painted a good picture of myself today. I want to apologize to the listeners. I'm listening to Bachelor podcasts. Don't watch the show.
Alante Taylor speaking to the basketball team after the game.
Alante. So I missed the Lamonte.
Yeah.
There are some blonde moments that are oh so real.
John, hello again.
Hello!
We also discussed bounce back teams for 2020. This is a list that can be subject to change. We'll probably do this power poll again. I'll just have completely different teams by August. But right now, in February, bounce back candidates for college football's 2020 season. John, would you like to give us five?
Why, sure. I'll start with Texas A&M. I don't think the Aggies did last year what many thought or hoped they would, but I think that they're in a better position to make a higher climb in the West. Number four, there are two teams in my top five that it's going to be a bounce back, and it better be. Number four, Michigan. It's about time the Wolverines do something for Jim Harbaugh. Number three, Florida State. I like their hire, and I think that it is going to be a steady climb for the Seminoles after the disaster that just took place in Tallahassee. Number two, this is an even bigger, better be, Texas. And then number one, Alabama.
So you're going with the Bama. I like that, Joel, throughout the – well, they did lose two games. So for them, the gap for the fan base from going unbeaten in two games is a very, very wide one.
Didn't win the West. Didn't win the SEC championship. Didn't win the national championship. So it's bounce back time.
I can't believe those Rammer Jammers still have gear that they're wearing. They should burn it all.
Some probably have. Heather, your top five bounce back candidates for 2020.
You threw this one out earlier. I like this pick. Nebraska. What do they do under Scott Frost? Let's see what happens for the Cornhuskers in 2020. Number four is Syracuse. You know, they're just a year removed from having a really good season. Fell to 5-7 this year. Let's see if they are able to bounce back under Dino Babers. Number three, like John said, Texas A&M. Here's a check to the good. They trade Clemson and Georgia on their schedule for Colorado and Vanderbilt. So, yeah, you're going to be bouncing back in the win column quite nicely. Number two is going to be Texas for me. And I said number one because I don't think you're going to have as, or I hope you're not going to have as much up and down, is the Vols. Could this be a bounce back year for Jeremy Pruitt and start off to a great finish or the start to a great finish? Let's see what happens.
I have, John, you'll see on my list, I put Florida State and then cross it off. It'll get the honorable mention, and I'm going to go Tennessee at number five for a couple of reasons, to get yelled at less, and then also still year one, give them a little bit of time, but I do think Florida State's on the radar. So I have Tennessee 5, Miami 4, also because you probably better start winning soon. They had some bad losses this year, and while it was first year as the head coach, Manny Diaz took back over the program because he actually left, but he had been there. So I think fans will expect him to make a move soon. I have A&M in the same spot as Heather, number three, for some of the same reasons. Not only what they should be as a team, but also the schedule lightens up a lot. Vanderbilt's probably not going to be as good as Georgia. Colorado, we'll see.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Colorado.
Colorado with a new coach. Yeah.
Yeah. Compared to Clemson, they both start with a C. That's the end of it. Nebraska, number two. Texas, number one. Texas needs to be back for Tom Herman's sake, I would say, next year as well.
Yeah, because they started last year, and it's like, here they come. It's like, not so much.
Yep, that is the Power Poll. It's driven by Ted Russell Ford, looking at bounce-back teams for 2020. If you were looking to make a move with your vehicle, Ford Truck Month, huge savings on brand-new Ford trucks for you with a number of different options in them. You can find them on Kingston Pike, on Parkside Drive. They have the lifetime warranty. Locally owned and operated, Ted Russell Ford Lincoln. John, what's coming up next on Sports Talk?
Well, a lot to get to on this Wednesday. We look forward to bringing you post-game reaction from Rick Barnes. There was plenty of it. We'll also hear from some of the Tennessee players. We look forward to being joined by Silk Cozart. He's got a premiere tomorrow of his documentary about basketball called Ball of Confusion. It's going to be at Cinnabar in Westtown. So awesome. we will talk with him at 4:35. Let's see. We've got John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Be interesting to get his take on the Astros as well, as we talk mostly about the NFL with John, but everything is up for grabs. Then we will have Mike Barnett, former Tennessee assistant coach. He's been with Terry Francona for years in Cleveland. He's going to join us to talk about the Astros and Major League Baseball. So we've got all that, some post-game reaction from Tony Vitello, and let's see. I think that's pretty much it. That and more today on Sports Talk.
I wonder if Mike's hitters do better if they know what the pitch is going to be.
I'd say they want to go in fresh.
Yeah, that's right. We don't think it impacted the game. Did you say it impacted the game? Never said it.
No, I didn't.
Did you say it didn't impact the game? No.
You're making up lies. John, we appreciate the extra time as always. Safe travels again, and look forward to Sports Talk coming up next.
Thank you so much. You guys have a great night.
We'll see you tomorrow at noon on Sports 180 on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.